So I invited Dania over. I work with her, and I actually have been following you before I work with you as being that awesome person who did something with chickens and Go. Is that correct? You should enable your microphone, by the way.
Yes.
Sadly, I heard there are no chickens here today. That's for the tiny Go people at the last hour of the day. We have a tiny Go come. I have been told there will be no chickens, but there might be fireworks, which I have to forbid because of fire regulations. Just as a warning. But I'm going to let you go, Daniel, to talk about the amazingness of something called eBPF that already has been mentioned 5 times today, even without
Wow.
an eBPF talk. So applause!
Hi everyone, can you hear me well? Yes, good, okay. So let's start with a quick poll. Who has an Android phone here? Can you raise your hand? Yeah, most of you. I mean, that was kind of obvious for the first time, I guess. So let me tell you that you are running eBPF every day on your phone. And without knowing it, it is there for networking and statistics about your network. You're not observed. But you might wonder if eBPF is everywhere. Yes and no. So it's running on Android phone, but it's mainly present today in tools in the cloud native environments. I'm Dunja Shailuj, and today we're going to cover what is the role of eBPF in Kubernetes and in networking using Go. How is the world without eBPF? So if you want to add a feature to observe an application, you would probably have to ask someone from the Linux kernel development to add something in it, and it can take years before this feature will reach the Linux distribution. I say years. Yes. So with eBPF, you can dynamically update and run custom programs on your kernel. In fact, you just have to write an eBPF program, and just a few hours, maybe even a few minutes, you are able to observe what's on your network, on your kernel. Let's have an overview of eBPF. So you have an application running in the user space. So I guess most of you are developers today and Go developers. Yes. So you are running an application in the user space, and you are doing syscalls, system calls, like opening a file or allocating memory, all these things or events on the Linux kernel. And eBPF programs can be attached to these events. So each time, for example, you're opening a file, an eBPF program will run automatically. But let's have a quick example of a program where you can trace when files are open. So now you are seeing C code, and you're like, what is she doing? Why is it C code and not Go code? Yes, you will probably have to deal with C code if you want to write eBPF programs first. So let's have a look. It's very basic. So this C program is being attached to one trace point in the system kernel. And this syscall is enter open at. It means that each time you are opening a file on your system or with your application, this eBPF program will run automatically. And we're just logging file opening, a very simple log, using a helper BPF trace printk, like a println or a print function in Go. And the output when these programs run is a log with all the traces, file opening, and we can see here the process IDs. So there is the cat that I'm actually launching in the trace pipe. So this is where all the logs from the kernel are going. And systemd journal, because the kernel is opening file all the time to actually run. So it's also opening file. Let's have a quick demo. Hopefully, the demo are going to work better than the previous talk. So here I have a bunch of files, but I have my C file that I just show you. And I will show you later in this talk how you are going to attach them. But I just want to show you what it looks like. And I'm using sudo here for one reason is that to launch eBPF program and to run them, you need specific capabilities. So that's why I'm running like that. And on this side, I'm just going to do a cat of the logs. And can you see well? Yeah, it seems okay. So we are seeing all the logs from the cat here. File opening, so you can see that there are a bunch of file open. It's actually going in real time. So what you're seeing, all the traces or the file being open in real time with this little code. So that's very powerful. I mean, I find it fascinating. I don't know about you, but. And this is one of many of the capabilities of eBPF. And I want to talk to you about my favorite one, which is XDP for Express Data Path. So with XDP, you can analyze and filter packets before they even reach the Linux kernel network stack. So for example, if you have malicious packets that are arriving on your network, they can be dropped before it reached the kernel. It reached actually your system. So it saves CPU cycles. It can save also memory and avoid some vulnerability, and problems. So very powerful, XDP. And it takes the performance in general to a next level, especially in distributed systems where the requirement of performance are really high. And that's why we're talking about Kubernetes here. Kubernetes is at the foundation of cloud native environment and distributed system. How many of you are familiar with Kubernetes and running it? Okay. Oh, not as many as I thought, honestly. That's interesting. Okay. So Kubernetes is built on shared infrastructure. You have many containers running on a single host, meaning on a one kernel. Because eBPF programs are running at a kernel level, they have visibility on the entire stack. They aren't limited to one container. So all the eBPF programs can act and modify and observe what's happening on all the pods across one host. And there are many use cases like networking. You can actually load balance, for example, traffic. You can do security by dropping malicious packets and enforcing security or doing observability and tracing, like we just saw with the file opening. But what makes eBPF even more exciting is all the ecosystem that exists today. There is a full room of eBPF today, but there is many tools like BCC for tracing or Cilium between networking and security and Pixie for observability. All these tools already exist and are using eBPF under the hood to do all these amazing things like tracing, profiling, monitoring, and more. Let's have a look to a quick example using Cilium. So Cilium is doing efficient networking thanks to eBPF. So in clusters, we have the pods and the nodes communicating. It goes through a bunch of things in the traffic, but especially go through the chain of holds of IP tables to define where a packet comes from and where it should go. And instead of doing that, Cilium is using the power of eBPF by attaching these programs to specific hooks in the kernel and bypassing all this chain. So all the traffic is going to be very fast and efficient in that way. And it's, again, very interesting for very large distributed systems, because you're going to be able to run a lot of requests in a few milliseconds, for example. So you have an overview of eBPF now, but you might wonder, how does it even work under the hood? So let's have a quick look. Bear with me. So we have first an eBPF program that is going to be compiled into bytecode. Bytecode is what the kernel understands. It's 0 and 1, basically. And before you can actually attach it to system calls, to hooks and trace points, you would have to go to one critical step, which is the verifier. And the verifier acts as a gatekeeper. It ensures that you won't crash your kernel, because you're running programs that are running on your kernel. You could have a blue screen and just crash your system, and you don't want that, especially on large systems. And this verifier will check, for example, that your program is terminating loops or that you're not doing outside of the bound memory allocation. Like, very basic stuff, but very interesting. When your program is approved by the verifier, you have the just-in-time compiler actually compiling it and doing some optimization depending on your hardware. And finally, you have your program that can be attached to the system calls. Then all the processes that you are running would be able to send messages and receive them. And each time there is an event and the eBPF program is attached to, it's going to actually run automatically and dynamically. It can be through socket, TCP, IP, and network device. OK, we are talking here to developers. So let's talk about development. So as I mentioned, you would have to write probably C. I know that's a bit sad, but not too much. You will have a C code that you compile into ELF object, into bytecode, and you can use Clang for that. There are specific compilers to do it. You could write it into bytecode if you would like to, but I mean, no one does. It's only for the kernel. You would probably write it in C. So this is the most traditional way to do it, for several reasons, but mainly the ecosystem is already built nowadays on C. There are libraries available. You can handle all the resources precisely. And if you're a cool kid, you're going to go to Rust. But so it makes the concurrency easier than C, and there is memory safety. Just, you know, the ecosystem is still in maturation and evolving. There are not as many as resources, but the compiler is able to compile the eBPF program into bytecode that is understood by the kernel. And so you have your program. You're writing it. So you might wonder where I'm storing data, because, yeah, I can see traces, but I want to handle data at some points. Like if I'm doing, for example, counting packets going through my network. So this is where maps are coming. So maps are at the backbone of eBPF programs. This is where you will share all this data and store them. There are different types of maps, actually 30 of them, with different types. But I mean, probably you will use hash with key, basic key values, but very powerful. And they are the bridge between the Linux kernel and the user space. So you would be able to write data into the maps from the kernel and read it from the user space, or you have something in the user space that you want to inject to the kernel and then be able to read it from there, you could also do. And the code in the user space is able also to load the bytecode and the program. Hope it makes sense for you. Are you lost? I can feel like, no, that's okay. People are saying yes. Okay, cool. So the user space, in the user space, the code that you're going to run and write, it can be written in C, but you might not write C again. You can use Python because it's more high level and there are libraries, but I would recommend it for more exploration and experimentation if you want to get your hands dirty at the beginning. And of course, I'm not going to convince you, but you're already Go developers. You would probably choose Go for its simplicity and its performance. There are libraries that exist also today to use it with eBPF. I mentioned only three of them here. There are others that you can have a look to, but there is libbpf go and gobpf. They are actually based on cgo. So as you may know, you don't want to use cgo. But Cilium eBPF is not based on cgo, and you can actually load and attach your program. It's very easy to integrate with the ecosystem existing already in Go, because you might know, but in Kubernetes environment, all the tools around cloud native, most of them are built in Go, like Grafana, Prometheus, and all these tools. So that's very easy to integrate an application that you would like to deploy with that. Let's have a look to another example, a concrete one, where we are doing monitoring. So First, I'm going to show you some code. Again, some C, sorry. So we have a map. So we talked about map, and I'm going to show you a concrete one. So here I'm using a map type array with a key and a value with a max entries of 1, because what I'm going to do is to store for the number of, for each time there is a packet going through my network, I'm going to increment a counter. Very basic. So my function here is just doing map lookup element. So this is a helper that you can use, and it's going to increment this packet counter each time there is a new packet. And because I'm attaching it to my favorite feature, do you remember XDP that I just mentioned? Each time there is a new packet, this counter is going to be incremented. Okay, so I kind of lied to you. So I'm not going to use Clang directly. I'm going to use BPF2Go to attach my program. It's a tool from Cilium eBPF, and it makes the life easier as a Go developer. So you have your C program, and you're going to generate Go objects from that. So you can use the programs and the maps very easily in your Go code and manipulate them. So I use here Go generate because it's easier when you are developing and maintaining some eBPF code and Go code. This is the generated Go objects from the comments. So this is only a sample of them. There are others. But here we have a counter objects. So inside we have a counter programs, counter maps, and counter variables. And inside the program, I have actually my program, my eBPF program. Here, this struct tag, it's very important because it is the actual name of your program inside the kernel. So it makes a link between the Go code and the kernel objects. And then we have the maps. So there is only one, but if you have many of them, they will appear also here. And again, this is the name of the map inside the kernel. And you have finally the main. And in the main, what you're doing is loading all these objects by using load counter objects here. This is, again, a function that has been generated by the BPF2Go tool. Then I just define my interface network that I'm going to use. Here it's eth0. And this helper function, link.attachxdp, which is in the Cilium eBPF library that you can see in the imports. So I'm using in the option the programs that we just generated and the interface. And this is the way to actually attach my program, eBPF, to my Go code. Just one thing, here the defer. It's kind of important because when you close your program, it's going to detach your program. So you don't have it running and be attached all the time. Okay, this is just the last part of the main function. It's just fetching periodically every second the packet count, and we are using lookup function on the map, on the packet count. And then we just print it here. Very easy. Okay, let's have a look in real time. Again, so here I have, let me show you. Can you see well again? Yeah. Okay, so I have my C program here that I just show you with my map, XDP, my counter being incremented. I have my main that is not currently compiling because I need to generate the Go object. I had it before. So Go generate. Now that I generated my objects, let's have a look to what it looks like. I have actually big endian and little endian, depending on your architecture. But you can see here a bunch of things. Don't worry. What is important is to find, again, the objects that I just showed you in the slides. And in the main, now it's compiling. We can see the load counter objects, the interface, and the attach XDP. I'm not cheating. I'm showing you the real things that I just showed you. Okay, so now I have this. I want to build. So now I have my executable here, my binary, and I'm going to launch it using, again, sudo. Yay! It's working. So, thank you. So, as you can see, you're seeing the number of packets that are going through my network in real time. So we built a C program in the kernel, we wrote an application in the Go code, and we retrieved all this data from the map in the kernel, and we are showing it in the user space. So that's very powerful to extract all this data from the kernel into the user space. Hope you enjoyed this demo. Now I want to show you more concrete examples. So this is very basic things and little files that I just show you. And I want to show you in real life, in a concrete project, what the code could look like. And as a disclaimer, sorry for the eyes of Valentine Cisco people, this is not the real code from Cilium. I just put some pseudocode so you have an idea. If you've seen some of the talks today about eBPF and StateDB, you know already that it's more complicated than that. That was just a disclaimer. So Cilium, it's an open source project that is enabling network policy enforcement, doing services, load balancing, and more stuff. But we're going to focus on network policy today. It is using the eBPF programs to do it. And we're going to have a look. So first, we're going to declare a YAML file, and not Elvish, a YAML file to declare the Cilium network policy. So what we are doing here is just saying that all the pods with the labels matching backend, so endpoint is a pod for the people that doesn't know, it's a resource. So we have a pod that has labels matching backend, and all the traffic coming, the ingress coming from the pods with the labels matching frontend are a load. Otherwise, all the traffic coming from external, I don't know, anyone that would like to contact the backend cannot. I mean, this is a very common use case. You don't want like anyone to communicate with your backend and only the frontend. So in the code, what it looks like. So I will have something called an endpoint with an ID, labels, and identity. Because in Cilium, all the pods, all the resources are transformed into identity. An identity is a set of labels. And here I have two endpoints, so two identities, with the front end and the app back end. So this is my set of labels. I, for the sake of this example, I put only one, but you could have several of them. And then you have a policy with a source identity, and it's one, and the destination identity, which is two, the front end and the back end. And we say that it's allowed, it's true. You could say that it's denied and say false. It depends on what you are dealing with. Then we have in the eBPF map code, all the policies that are stored in a map. So we can do it from the Go code. So you define a map in the kernel program, in the eBPF program, and from the Go code, you are injecting dynamically all these policies that you are defining in the YAML configuration and deploying live on your cluster. So again, everything is dynamic and in real time. So for example, if you want to mitigate a vulnerability, you could actually deploy a configuration in the Cilium network policy in real time. And finally, you enforce these policies in the eBPF program by saying, if this source identity to this destination is allowed, in that case, I'll let the packet pass. Otherwise, we drop it. I hope I sparkled some curiosity and you learn a lot about eBPF. Either you want to contribute to eBPF and Cilium or just add some little eBPF in your day-to-day life, I would recommend to go to the lab from Isovalent eBPF Getting Started. This is where I started. You don't have to set up an environment. It just pops up a cluster for you with all the dependencies that you need. So that's very cool. All the examples that I show you are available on my repository. And I would love to connect, get feedback, have your point of view about eBPF. There is an eBPF room, so if you're curious next year, you can go there. And thank you so much.
Applause!